Scott Ritter is back on the show today. He is the former UN weapons inspector in Iraq from 1991 through 1998. Former U.S. Marine Corps intelligence officer. He's been on the show many times through the years, including when he published a book called Iraq Confidential. I've invited him back on here today to talk about Iran and the threat of nuclear problems with them. Iran today is threatening the United States with harm and pain for its role in hauling Tehran before the UN Security Council over its nuclear program. Scott, welcome back to the show.
It's a pleasure to be there.
What's your reaction to all of this?
Well, you know, look, when you start pushing somebody into a corner, don't be surprised when they lash out and lash out irresponsibly. I'm not here to defend Iran, its government, the words they say or programs they undertake, but I am here to say that this is as pointless and needless a confrontation as one could imagine. There's absolutely no requirement for the United States to be taking this hard of a line at this point in time. Iran is not in violation of the Nonproliferation Treaty. We have a weapons inspection process in place in Iran that works, and we have plenty of time. This is not something, a crisis that's, you know, going to explode tomorrow. The most conservative estimate regarding Iran's ability to produce nuclear weapons is 2 years away. It ranges from 2 to 10. But the bottom line is no one, and I emphasize no one, has provided any factually based data that sustains the allegations that Iran is even pursuing a nuclear weapons program. So this is just a ridiculous, ridiculous situation and a very dangerous situation that we find ourselves in.
Now, why do you say it could happen as soon as 2 years from now if there's no evidence of them even being close to that?
I said the most conservative estimates, and that's put out by some U.S. intelligence services that hypothesizes a covert, undetected Iranian capability that magically exists where none has been found. I'm somebody who believes in facts. And right now, the facts are the world acknowledges Iran is not in violation of the Nonproliferation Treaty. The world acknowledges that there is no evidence of an Iranian nuclear weapons program. The world also says they are concerned and that they cannot discount the possibility of a covert program. But that's like trying to prove the negative. I mean, that's the United States and Israel saying one exists. And in the international community saying, well, we can't find any evidence of one existing, but we're not willing to say one doesn't exist.
Do you believe that Iran is pushing for a non-weapons nuclear system to get nuclear energy more proficient throughout Iran?
It's not what I believe. It's what I know. And what I know is in 1976, the Shah of Iran petitioned the United States government. At the time, Gerald Ford was the president, Dick Cheney was the White House Chief of Staff, Donald Rumsfeld was the Secretary of Defense, and petitioned the U.S. government for a nuclear energy program. The U.S. government approved that program, and at that time, that program included the full fuel cycle, including enrichment, and that the Shah had purchased material for this program. It was frozen in 1979, and the Iranian government says that all it's trying to do is complete the nuclear energy program that was started by the Shah. These are what the facts are. What reality is, or you know, what could be happening, I don't know. And I'm one that says we don't give the Iranians the benefit of the doubt. I'm not willing to sit back and do nothing. I'm in favor of allowing the weapons inspectors to complete the work they were doing, which is not just implementation of the Nonproliferation Treaty safeguard inspections, but there was an additional protocol of inspections above and beyond that required by the treaty, which the Iranians had voluntarily agreed to, and which was, you know, enough to guarantee that the Iranians would never be able to do illegal enrichment activity undetected. And yet, thanks to the United States, those inspections are now terminated.
Well, what do you mean when you say thanks to the United States, those inspections are terminated?
Because the Iranians said we're willing to work with the International Atomic Energy Agency, but we will not continue these extraordinary protocols if the United States forces the issue to the Security Council for the sole purpose of imposing economic sanctions to support a unilateral American policy of regime change in Iran versus any genuine nonproliferation or disarmament effort. And this is what concerns me. You know, we saw the smokescreen once. We saw the Bush administration create a threat out of nothing regarding Iraqi WMD to implement a policy of regime change in Iraq. And I'm very concerned that we're seeing the exact same pattern repeat itself today regarding Iran.
Do you trust Mohammed El-Baradei, the chief of the International Atomic Energy Agency?
It's not a matter of trusting Mohammed El-Baradei. Of course I trust him, but you need to understand the limitations that he operates under. I have worked with the International Atomic Energy Agency. I've been in Vienna, and I understand the highly politicized environment that he operates in. And I understand that he is not given the freedom necessary to express his own independent thought, that he is beholden to a board of governors that is dominated by the American presence. And at the end of the day, Mohammed El-Baradei is not able to do anything that the United States doesn't agree to. This is why Mohammed El-Baradei is going along with having this case brought forward to the Security Council, not because he necessarily wants to, but frankly speaking, his hands are tied.
But when I'm asking you, when I ask if you trust him, I mean, when they were in there doing the inspections, and were they to be allowed to do that again in the future, do you trust that those inspections are giving us a true picture of what Iran's nuclear capabilities are and can be?
They're giving us as good a picture. Is it a perfect inspection regime? Absolutely not. I mean, but I'll give you I'll just set this up further. You know, some people are saying that we should call for the same level of inspections in Iran that we had in Iraq. But my point is, if the United States is pursuing a policy of regime change where disarmament's just a facilitator, not a real legitimate end goal of its own, it doesn't matter what the inspection regime is. Mohammed El-Baradei and the IAEA inspectors have built a very stringent, tough inspection regime that would make it virtually impossible for the Iranians to pursue a covert program undetected. I mean, what would be required of Iran to go around these inspections, not only in terms of fooling the inspectors on the ground, fooling satellite photographs above, but also fooling the international procurement authorities, because the Iranians would have to go out and buy all new equipment, bring it into Iran undetected, and then install it in new facilities they would have to build from scratch. And we can sit here and say, is this a possibility? It's not a probability.
It's the Paul Harris Show on News Talk 1120 KMOX, talking with Scott Ritter, one-time U.N. weapons inspector and former U.S. Marine Corps intelligence officer, about the battle at the U.N. Security Council over Iran and nuclear energy or nuclear weapons, and where we stand now. At the moment, the IAEA, the International Atomic Energy Agency, which had been in there doing inspections, is no longer there, essentially because Iran said when the U.S. took us to the Security Council, we wouldn't allow those inspections to continue. Scott Ritter is with me here. Were they cooperating before that, Scott?
Well, let me just correct the record. The U.N. inspectors are still in Iran.
Oh, they are?
They're carrying out the safeguard inspections in accordance with the Non-Proliferation Treaty. And this is an important point to emphasize. Iran today is in total conformity with all legal, lawful requirements under the Non-Proliferation Treaty. Nobody has said they're in violation.
Okay.
There is this additional protocol that I mentioned, the extra inspections, the no-notice inspections, the one that give you the extra confidence that Iran isn't cheating. Those inspections were terminated. Iran said there's no need for us to continue with this protocol if the IAEA has given up on us.
But they were cooperating with that beforehand.
Absolutely.
Okay.
They never blocked the IAEA inspections, and that's the irony. I mean, I just don't know what all this fuss is about. If it's about disarmament and nonproliferation, we have a process that, while not perfect, was working, was making progress, was making the situation safer. But I'm concerned that this is about regime change and that the United States has no intention of allowing the IAEA to complete its task.
Scott, Iran is the second largest oil producer within OPEC. Why do they need nuclear power plants or nuclear energy at all?
Well, ultimately, that's a question that the Iranian government has the sovereign right to answer. I'll try and give an answer that you know makes sense. Their economy is completely based on oil. As the world reaches so-called peak oil, Iran is concerned that it is a developing economy, and it is a very large economy that's developing. More and more of their oil is going to be required for domestic consumption, reducing the stocks of oil that can be sold on the international market, thereby reducing the amount of money that Iran will generate through oil sales. So they claim that by having nuclear energy, and I think they're looking for, you know, I don't know, 70 million megawatts, some huge number like that worth of generation capacity, that if they put in these reactors, these 70, 10 megawatt reactors, that they will release oil from domestic consumption that can be sold on the international market, and thereby making their, you know, oil-based economy that much more viable for that much longer. That's their argument, and it's one that was viable. Remember, the Iranians made this case in 1976 to the Ford administration with Donald Rumsfeld as Secretary of Defense. He approved it at that time. He said, this makes perfect sense. And the Iranians said that if you're going to invest so much into a strategic resource like nuclear power, you cannot afford to have the fuel source for this nuclear power held hostage by the whims of international diplomacy, meaning that, for instance, if they can only procure their fuel from the United States or Russia, and suddenly we say, you know what, we're not happy with your government, we're cutting off your fuel supply, their reactors are useless now. So the Iranians say, we have to have this domestic source of generating fuel. It makes perfect sense, except if you're worried if Iran is pursuing a nuclear weapons program.
And, of course, in 1976, there was a much friendlier government in Tehran than there is today. Now we have a saber-rattling president who proclaims he wants to wipe Israel off the map and has proclaimed himself to be an enemy of the United States.
Absolutely. And, I'm not here to stroke the reputation of the Iranian president.
Oh, I understand
or the mullahs, but we need to point out that nowhere in the Non-Proliferation Treaty does it give any nation the right to veto another nation's legitimate right to pursue nuclear technology just because they don't get along.
I'm
not happy with the Iranian government either.
No, I don't think anybody could be at this point, not on in this country anyway. Can you explain to me in terms that even a layperson like me can understand how hard it is to go from having the ability to run a nuclear power plant for energy to making a nuclear weapon? How close are those two things on the scale of technology?
Well, first of all, having a nuclear power plant and having the fuel cycle, because having a nuclear power plant and having an enrichment capability to produce fuel are two totally different things. But if you're going to have a weapons program, you need to have the enrichment capability. But all that gives you is enrichment. All that gives you is fissile material. Now, to take that and turn it into a viable weapon, that's a totally different technology set. And here's the other thing that I point out to everybody. We are focused on Iran's enrichment capacity, saying that if Iran gets enrichment capability, it now has the technology necessary to produce fissile material, which is true. If you're making fuel for a nuclear plant, you only enrich to like 25%. But with that same technology, you can enrich to 93%. Now you have bomb-grade material. But that doesn't mean you have a bomb. Now you've got to go down the completely different route of processing that into metal, forming that into a sphere, the weapons design, having high explosive lenses that you've tested that can compress it in an implosion device, all these other things which Iran's not doing. No one says they're doing. No one has any evidence that they're doing it, except drawings provided by the AQ Khan black market, which Iran claims to have turned to get centrifuge technology. And when they got the centrifuge technology for enrichment, all these other drawings came in. And Iran has turned these drawings over, saying, we did not request these drawings. These were given to us. But the United States says the fact that Iran possesses these drawings shows intent to produce nuclear weapons. The Iranians are saying, no. All we wanted was the centrifuge. They gave us all this other stuff. We didn't ask for it. And here are the drawings. You can have them. And no one's detected any evidence of any of this other nefarious activity taking place.
This is obviously a story we're going to continue to cover, and I'm going to come back to you because in all the years I've had you as a guest, you've never steered me wrong. And on many points that other people contradicted you, you've turned out to be right on every single one. So I thank you for that.
Well, thank you, sir.
Scott Ritter, former U.N. weapons inspector and U.S. Marine intelligence officer, and a regular guest here on the Paul Harris Show on News Talk 1120 KMOX.